This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks.
He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top.
Wow.
You think it's a mission? And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the June 20th episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, my co-host Daniel Galvan. We're going to talk about everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts. We're going to talk about some of the big topics in MMA over the past couple of days. We'll get you ready for this Saturday's UFC Fight Night card in Singapore. I guess here in the United States, we really can't call it UFC Fight Night since, well, you have to get up pretty early in the morning to watch these fights. Also, going to have four interviews for you. Going to talk to the fighter that's going to be challenging Lima McFarlane for the Bellator Wins flyweight title next week, coming up at Bellator 201. Alejandra Lara, of course, I had a chance to, caught up with Alima last week, so this week we'll hear from Lara. Also, speaking of Bellator 201, we'll talk to Syed Awad, who's going to be the co-main event of the fight card, taking on Ryan Couture. Also, we'll talk to Tim Caron, who's going to be a part of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series next week. We'll be taking on Andrew Todhunter. Our final interview is going to be a man that's going to be fighting on Friday night at NFC. Jared Gooden going to be taking on Ladarius Jackson. Plus, we'll have our buy-sell segment, and we will preview PFL 2, which takes place on Thursday night, a really nice fight card that PFL has put together. But Daniel, how you doing, man?
Jason, I am doing swell. It is a summer day in Texas with plenty of rain pouring down, so we having a little synergy, as I know you live in the land of Florida with plenty of rain and crazy criminals and whatnot. So if you hear any rain in the background, that is courtesy of me. But Jason, it's a pretty interesting week of mixed martial arts. You know, we don't have anything marquee per se. But I will say I'm looking forward to PFL. I'm looking forward to watching the Singapore card. And I'm generally optimistic about this week, Jason. It's not a big time week for sure. But there's plenty of fights going on. We'll have plenty to talk about.
There is so much to talk about what's going on here in MMA. You speak of rain. Actually, it was raining a little bit before we started recording this podcast. I was like, man, I hope my power doesn't go out. So we'll knock on wood. Hopefully the power does not go out.
We got double the odds. We got double the odds, Jason. And this isn't on our deal. And I should have told you this before we started recording. Man, I just want to throw it out there just to gauge your thoughts. Just to throw a curveball real quick, UFC 225, I want to get the number right, but there's a report out there that the buy rate for a card that we thought was going to do – you know, it was a marquee card, did about 250,000 buys. I saw that on the front page of Bloody Elbow. Do you think that's good or bad for the UFC? Just want to throw that out there.
I'm a little surprised by that number. I would have thought it would have been a little higher with CM Punk. Kind of makes you wonder, you know, did CM Punk really even bring too much to the pay-per-view buy? I mean, you got to remember, it was late last week. There was an LA Times report that said it was like in 150 range. UFC came out and said that that number was inaccurate. And, you know, I've always been told it kind of takes, you know, a couple of days for that number to come in. And it was Dave Meltzer on Tuesday reported that 250,000 buy. I was a little surprised by that number. But, you know, if you really kind of think about it, I mean, you know, 250K is not really a bad number right now in today's UFC pay-per-view model.
It is not a bad number. It's obviously bad if you contrast it with what we would think of when we would think of these big-time pay-per-view fight cards. Because in the year 2018, man, that's what UFC 225, that's the feeling it had for me and you. But I guess the big issue was that's probably not the feeling it had for your casual fan, which is crazy because you would think a fight card with multiple championship matchups with CM Punk, it was so stacked. Obviously, the prelims were great. Man, it kind of shows you when kind of the bigger attempts by the UFC aren't as landing as much as they used to be, that's when you – I think really takes start, because sometimes when we get these real low numbers, Jason, these 100 and some thousand, when it's the lesser championships being defended, I think the thing that keeps us, lets us go to sleep at night is the thought that, well, when we get those big shows, they're going to deliver. But more often than often, man, you are good. You only can count on one hand the amount of people you can put on pay-per-view and expect 500 plus thousand.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a tweet from Jed Goodman on Tuesday where he took out all the Conor Ronda pay-per-views over like the last couple of years, and you know, there was pay-per-view here and there. UFC 200 obviously did very well, but that's, you know, it's interesting kind of the world we live in terms of pay-per-views. I mean, you look at the July pay-per-view, and I know we've got a question later on, we're going to talk about this, but in terms of the buy-sell segment, but you know, 226 is another fine lineup that the UFC has put together. But Daniel, there is so much interesting things going on. Yeah, you mentioned about the report by Dave Meltzer, and he had a piece earlier this week where it was about the UFC and ESPN deal. I thought it was a very good piece done by Dave Meltzer. But you know, one of the things that I think he in a way touched on this piece, but really did not touch on this piece, was the fact of, you know, when you're talking about in the fall and the early part of the year for the UFC on ESPN, there's going to be a lot of Saturdays. They're not going to be on big ESPN. And so I feel like it's kind of like our duty to kind of remind people, like, you know, hey, when the UFC deal starts up in 2019, don't just automatically expect that the UFC is going to be on big ESPN on a Saturday night and that the ESPN is going to show them over college basketball.
Or college basketball, college football. Those two things are definitely going to take precedence. And that's a key component to bring out there. What I found interesting about his article is that, tell me if I'm reading this wrong, but he's kind of talking about maybe some of the negatives are the UFC won't be on TV as much. So much of it will be on the streaming service. And also the time constraints, they will be constrained to much smaller times to air their shows, like 3 hours. I don't think that's a negative. I think the UFC is going to live in a world where the hardcore fan base is going to watch everything. Less people watch everything. But the fact that there's less product out there and the product lasts is smaller times, I actually think that's beneficial to attracting casual fans if they play their cards right and put a lot of value in those TV appearances.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, when I think about from a financial aspect where, you know, all these prelim cards are going to be on ESPN Plus, I think from a consumer level, there's going to be a ton of value there. But yeah, you're not going to have, you know, the 5 and 6 hour, you know, time blocks on ESPN as we see on FS1. So I think that's good. But, you know, when it's the fall, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a Saturday night where the UFC is going to be on ESPN because, you know, they're not going to air a UFC card over college football. But, you know, a lot of that article was basically about how, you know, this is a deal that's really going to help the UFC out financially till 2023. But that was kind of one, and I think it's a really interesting piece on the business side of the UFC, but I thought one of the things I want to kind of bring up is the fact of,
well, it's, you know, not even just fall, it's winter also, right? Not 2 seasons?
I mean think about it, September through, you know, the beginning of March,
that's literally half the year. I'm bad at most things. That might be like 7 months. That's so basically what we're saying, and we're not super sure, but we're pretty positive, is that for 7 months, for sure, UFC probably won't be on ESPN Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be ESPN2, ESPNU, or ESPN News. So, I think that's where you're going to see a lot of UFC content.
So here's the counter, Jason. If you're the UFC, do you have the ability to change the day your shows air?
Makes you wonder if maybe they do more Friday shows.
I think you have to. I think you can't sign a deal with ESPN and do 7 months without being on the mothership. I think maybe, and we're just riffing here, but I think when we're talking about the future of the UFC, there may be a change on the TV cards, the nights that there are TV cards. They may look to do it on Friday night. I'm not particularly sure. I don't have to schedule out what other nights there will be. I mean, if you're ESPN, Jason, this is a stupid question. Would you choose to put Maction football over UFC? Probably, right? Or no? I don't know. Probably. I don't know what the ratings are for that.
Well, if you look at what the total poll is going to be, I mean, you know, on a Saturday night, the UFC is not going to be above college football. It's not going to be above college basketball. Obviously, you're not going to have any, you know, NFL. The NBA games on Saturday nights are on ABC, so you don't have to worry about that. But I think it's part of this deal that, I mean, look, the UFC is going to get a ton of exposure from ESPN. You know, I think the interesting part of it is just going to be is, do we see the interest level in MMA become higher than what it currently is? Because we both know this, and television ratings are a great metric for this. The fact of not as many people are watching MMA right now.
Yeah, I think it will go higher, just because, not only because of the change, Jason, but also because of where we are today in the history of the sport, short as it is, tends to, whenever things are down, eventually it picks up and there's a peak period. So if we're just removing the ESPN part of the situation, Jason, I would tell you business is going to pick up just because that's what it does. You get lucky with not just one, two, or three, but 10 to 12 very interesting fighters, some that are superstars and some that are just stars. So without the ESPN part of the equation, Jason, I would say things are going to pick up anyway. But I will say the move to ESPN and even the lack of TV time may play its hand right. I think less people than ever will obviously watch the entirety of the UFC product, but I do think more people than ever will watch the will regularly watch UFC TV product. It will be tough for the UFC on ESPN, I think, to outdo their best numbers on Fox. But by God, you look at some of their more recent numbers on Fox, there's a good chance they could beat some of those. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if a really stacked ESPN card does 2 million viewers. When you look at the numbers that WWE does on the USA Network, you know, it's they're not running super cards every single week, and they do pretty well compared to the UFC on Fox numbers. When you look at how many people are watching the last two events. So, Jason, I think the ESPN deal was good for the UFC, other than obviously there will be less eyeballs than ever on every fight. But the ones that matter, I think we'll have more. But it all depends on if the UFC plays their cards right, Jason. They cannot be running out lackluster cards when they're on ESPN1.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point you bring up there. While that was a very informational article, there was another informational article out there this week, Daniel, and I couldn't believe that it was something a fighter would publicly admit to, and that the manager of that fighter would not try to get this article from stop being published. And that was an article on Monday where Craig White, and for those who, you know, you hear the name Craig White, maybe it doesn't immediately jump out to you, that is the fighter that stepped up on short notice, under 2 weeks, to fight Neil Magny at the UFC event in Liverpool, replacing Gunnar Nelson. And he did an article, a interview where he talked about how he lost 46 pounds to make weight for that fight against Neil Magny. And, you know, weight cutting is it's a topic that's never going to end. We both know that. It's a story that's always going to be there. But I don't know why. Okay. You love the honesty from a reporter's aspect when you're talking to a fighter. You love that aspect. But from the fighter's aspect, and most importantly from the USC aspect, why the hell would you want this story out there?
Well, you wouldn't want it out there. I mean, at least more people are talking about Craig White. I would want it out there as the fan, but obviously if you're the UFC, it's a bad look. And it's 2 weeks. He had 2 week notice, and this is a guy who was cutting out to 170. And I believe he said, I mean, I'm bad at math. 170 plus 46 is 216. 2 weeks. He described what he would go through. Essentially, it was really, really late nights in and out of the sauna. I believe early nights in and out of the sauna. We're talking 600 calories. He worked out four times a day on an intake of 600 calories each meal. Each meal comprised of a small piece of meat. So I get 600 calories for the entire day, which literally sounds like torture, Jason. I eat 6,000 per meal. And this guy was supposed to compete. Obviously, Craig White's coming out because he's defending the early weigh-in, saying that the opportunity to rehydrate was beneficial here, and it could have been even more dangerous. But look, I think the takeaway from this story is pretty simple. Did the UFC ask him how much he weighed? Did he tell them? Did they care? Or did he lie to them? Because you can't be booking guys that are 46 pounds over 2 weeks out.
That clearly is one of my initial questions is did the UFC know how much he's weighing? I mean, just kind of put this in perspective. There are probably a majority of light heavyweights that probably walk around 225 pounds to 230 pounds. Think about this. He was weighing 216 and had to cut all the way down to 171 pounds to make weight. Something just kind of put in perspective. Also, you know, in that article, he talked about a previous bad weight cut he had and how he mentioned he never want to do that again. But of course, he did that. The two other things that really stuck out to me about this article, you know, besides, you know, how much weight he lost was, you know, the fighter is always going to want to fight. I, you know, we both know that. But the question has got to be, is the people around him, you know, why do they think, you know, this was a good idea from a health aspect? And I think my other big takeaway from this is I think maybe this says a lot about the MMA scene in the United Kingdom, that a fighter would be willing to put his body through that just to get into the UFC. I think that says a lot to me about what the financial situation appears to be in terms of when you're talking about that UK MMA scene.
Yeah, I mean, this guy legit cut 21.3% of his body weight in 2 weeks, which is just insane. And the thing is, this story wasn't surprising. I mean, you mentioned the UK scene, the Europe scene. I think for most fighters, anywhere money isn't great. There are some great outlets now in America where you can make a pretty good payday if you're in the right promotions, but that only serves so many fighters. So I believe maybe not 46 pounds, but I think this happens quite a bit. I think there are a lot of guys who don't talk about these drastic weight cuts that take these late notice fights, Jason. And so if we're looking for a solution, I think the solution is before agreeing to a fight on a short notice, a scale has to be put in front of a guy and he has to weigh in real quick, like almost immediately. Like he can't be cutting weight for a 2 week weight cut, but just to confirm a guy's weight within a safe, healthy distance. I think that's pretty much need to be a part of their procedure if they want to operate like a top flight athletic organization, because I don't really see any other way to stop it other than immediately getting a guy's weight to make sure he's within a reasonable range to cut weight, because 46 pounds is damn right dangerous. We're talking about one fifth of a guy's body weight.
Yeah, I mean, I think the UFC has to look at themselves in the mirror. This was, we should note, a self-regulated event by the UFC, you know, and I just, this is another story that the UFC really should be looking at this. They are the worldwide leader in mixed martial arts. The UFC could play a critical role in changing the culture of massive weight cutting. But it just, I don't know, and maybe it's just me, but I feel like the UFC just doesn't take this serious enough.
Yeah, I mean, we say it every time. Someone's going to die, and they're going to die in a UFC weigh-in, because people have already died before in weigh-ins, and the fact that it just hasn't happened in the UFC is why we don't care about it, apparently. I mean, that's just what's going to happen, dude. It sucks. It's sad. But the worst thing about these weight cuts is that it's incredibly dangerous. It absolutely is. And look, man, early weigh-ins or not, when you cut that much weight – before having the opportunity to rehydrate is when catastrophe can strike. Before having that opportunity to rehydrate your body at weigh-in, when you're doing such a crazy thing to your body, and we're doing fight cards every single week, and it's not even the short-term deal for these guys that I'm most concerned about. It's the thing that's going to affect most of them, which is the long-term deal. If you consistently do these hardcore weight cuts, that can't be good for your organs. I'm no doctor, Jason. But I am someone who does plenty of punishment to my organs through different methods, and it's not a good long-term deal there. I'm glad he said it. I would be kind of annoyed if I was the UFC, maybe super annoyed, but I want as much transparency as possible for the types of cuts these guys are doing, because I think the more people talk about it and put it in front of the public and we can kind of criticize it and we just bang it every single week that this has to stop, maybe something will change. But by God, probably not. I think we're screwed. I think we're screwed until something catastrophic happens, which is something we say every single week, and I'd rather not.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you follow Andrew Brandt, the former NFL executive, worked for the Green Bay Packers on Twitter?
I do. I follow a lot of people, though, so I probably missed it.
He has this saying, there will be lawyers. And if and look, hopefully it never happens, but if something awful happens on a UFC weigh-in, you know there's going to be a lot of lawyers involved.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, this sport has all kinds of situations where there will be lawyers. I mean, this sport is two guys hitting each other in the head. So I think that's the case. And you know, here's hoping people get their heads on right. And we have UFC, again, being the leader, as you said, leading the charge. But, Jesus, that's not going to happen. There have been so many opportunities to do so, and it seems like the focus is in the wrong point right now. The focus is the time of the way is definitely not where the focus should be, and that's where it is, which is a bit of a shame.
You notice that's gone really quiet over the last week?
Yeah. Yeah, it has.
Now, I will tell you this. I was talking to Mike Mazzulli earlier this week about something unrelated, and the weigh-in procedure came up, and he said, Jason, you can quote me on this on your podcast. He said he is not changing the weigh-in times. They are not going back to 4 o'clock. But, you know, look, we both know it's a per-commission basis, and I am sure that if the UFC truly wants to move the weigh-ins back to 4 o'clock, there will be some commissions that will do it. I think it's going to be very interesting to kind of see how UFC 227 on August 4th in LA plays out, because we both know Andy Foster has been the guy that has really been trying to lead the change in terms of how we do weigh-ins. So that's going to be very interesting. But I just the other day, I was just kind of thinking about it, and maybe part of it is because we really haven't heard from Dana White, and I'm guessing he's probably not going to be in Singapore this weekend. But it's just one of those things that it seems to be really quiet, and you know, and also Dana looks very bad when he made that comment about how the majority of fighters want, you know, the afternoon weigh-ins. Have any fighters come out and said they like the afternoon weigh-ins?
Yeah, there hasn't been a guy. I mean, if I'm Mike Jackson, maybe that's the place I go to. Maybe I go, Dana, I agree. Maybe if he wants to earn some brownie points with Dana White, that could be the way to go about it. Because if he did it, he'd be the first guy I saw. Surely there are some, but the way Dana made it seem, it's like the vast majority, which is like the vast majority of fighters I've seen publicly declare their opinion have been against Dana here. And maybe the reason, like you mentioned, is just the fact he hasn't really had an outlet. Although I guess he always does have an outlet with his Twitter, but I'm sure someone got to him to say, dude, shut up for a second.
Oh, I'm sure that likely happened. But if any fighter has come out and said they like the afternoon weigh-ins, I really haven't seen it. I know Matt Brown had a post where he kind of basically talked about the pros and cons of both. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting that he brought up in terms of a con of the afternoon weigh-ins was the fact of, yeah, if it's at 4 o'clock, that's great. But I also have to check in by 2 o'clock, and then I'm just sitting around dehydrated for 2 hours before I can step on a scale, as opposed to make weight, go downstairs, get on the scale, boom, you're done. So that's the only one that I've really seen, but everything else I've seen is just fighters saying how much they love the early weigh-ins. Another interesting topic that came out after we recorded the show last week was, of course, we recorded the show while the season premiere of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series was going on, and Chris Curtis got a win, but he announced after the fight was over on his social media that he was retiring from MMA, and I was not surprised by this, Daniel, and I think any reporter that has ever talked to Chris Curtis is not surprised by this, because he had basically laid this out there. He was not interested in being a 31-year-old prospect fighting on the regional scene. In the past, he's told me, he says, look, if this thing doesn't work out here in the near future, I'm just going to box. I'm not going to go the MMA route. And that's why when he made this announcement on social media, I wasn't shocked. And, you know, I saw some, you know, there were fighters, there were fans who were basically saying, Chris, don't give up on this, da, da, da. But I think that this is another story that really tells you how tough it is to be a fighter when you're outside the UFC and Bellator, when, you know, you're trying to make a decent living. It can be tough. And Chris is a guy who, goes away from his family to train in California with Sam Alvey and all the guys out there at Dan Harrison's team. You know, he's from Ohio. So when this came out, I wasn't surprised, and he's made it very clear to everyone since this, like, guys, I'm not changing my mind. And I kind of, when I saw, I think the thing is if he's at peace with this decision, let it be. There's no reason to try to talk him into to take another MMA fight.
And this kind of is a shame just because he earned a contract. He just put him, he was in a bad situation where he had one guy score an 8-second knockout and Greg Hardy get a first round finish. So looking at his performance, he looked phenomenal on the show, which is kind of sad because one would think if put on the Contender Series again, he would likely earn a contract. And honestly, he should probably just get a contract and his next fight should be in the UFC. So I do wonder, Jason, I know he went and he said he wouldn't fight again, but do you think there's a scenario where the UFC does offer him a fight in the promotion and he says yes?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, he's not a hot commodity for the UFC, so that's the issue if that happens, but still.
I think it's got to be like in the near future, like within the next 3 months.
Yeah, and he obviously has a talent level. It's going to depend on the matchup, how much success he does have. But if you watch what he did on the Contender Series, on most editions of the show, he would be one of those two guys with the contract.
Yeah, I do wonder, is like with the Contender Series, and I saw some other people bring this up, it makes you wonder, is there like a quota? Like they only give out X amount of contracts per season, and there was like this worry of, oh, if we give out 3 on the first episode, we can only give out 1, but you know, the next episode, but ultimately it just depends on how the fights go. But when you talk about the best 170 pounders that are available for the UFC to sign, Chris Curtis is one of them. There's no question about it, but you know, as I've said, I am not surprised by this. And I know there were some people, you know, kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe this. But if you ever talk to Chris Curtis, you're not surprised.
Yeah, and you have that perspective, and it's something where you look at this card in Singapore, and you look on the preliminary card, and man, there aren't very many fighters there that I would put above Chris Curtis in terms of talent level. There's a couple, but there ain't a lot, so it's not really a meritocracy.
We talked about it last week on this podcast, and that's a great way to start talking about Saturday's Singapore card. By the way, the main card starts at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, 5 a.m. Pacific time. You got 4 fights there on the main card. Your prelims will start at 4:30 a.m. Eastern time, 1:30 a.m. Pacific time. Look, I have no plans to get up to watch the prelims. I am, as I've said on this podcast, I'm a early riser for the most part. Typically, I'm up by, you know, around 6 a.m. And but if for some reason I can't sleep on Saturday morning and I get up at 5 o'clock and I roll into my home office, well, I put the fights on. Yeah, I'll put it on the TV, but I'm not going out of my way to get up very early to watch these fights. You know, when it comes to the prelims, you know, we talked about this last week. I think the one fight on the prelims that kind of sticks out to you is the fact of A, that Jake Matthews is on the prelims, but B, that it's actually the 4th fight of the night. That he is probably the guy on the prelims that really sticks out to me. Felipe Arantes is a guy that's been in the UFC for some time. Outside of that, Matt Schnell is always kind of a guy, been following his career for multiple years, since his evolution getting to the UFC. And then, of course, you have Taruto Ishihara, who's going to be in the featured prelim. Of course, we always talked about how much we love the personality of Taruto Ishihara. Makes you wonder if the new owners of the UFC like his slogan.
Yeah, I'm sure they absolutely hate it. Which, you know what? There's a side there. I'm looking forward to the fight, though. He's got a tough opponent in Peter Yan. I think the more you look at this card, the more you can kind of pick and choose what you want here. And there's more stuff that meets the eye. To me, the big fight is, obviously Jake Matthews, Shinsuke Anzai is a very good fight with two fighters with some momentum. Matt Schnell, not only him, but his opponent, Naoki Inoue, that's a really compelling flyweight matchup. And it's a matchup where, if you look at the odds, Schnell is a slight underdog, and this is a guy with a lot of talent and a lot of potential. I think he's going to win this fight, but I think Inoue Schnell is a great fight. And another one is the women's strawweight contest between Viviane Pereira and I'm going to mispronounce her name because I forget. Like you watch the fighters fight, and then you just get everyone's name right, and then it's like 4 months later, and you totally forget again. But Yan Xiaonan, which that's definitely not it. She impressed me against Kaylin Curd in her last fight. And she came across as someone that could really be a star in Asia. And she, her fight, from what I remember, was fairly exciting. She gets a pretty decent step up against Pereira. So that fight, I'm also looking forward to. And Errantes, I mean, I think he's set up to lose here. He's obviously a veteran, but he's taking on a guy in Yadong Sung, who is a slight underdog here. But by goodness, he looked phenomenal in his first fight, getting an early finish. So Errantes is a journeyman veteran amongst the UFC, but there's a chance he may be playing the role of gatekeeper for Song.
And, you know, for me, you know, this fight card is about the main event, co-main event. You got Cerrone versus Edwards and St. Preux against Pedro. You know, with Donald Cerrone, you have to wonder, is he at the point in his career where, like, he's kind of the guy the UFC is just going to kind of use to potentially elevate an up-and-coming fighter?
I think so, and that's kind of weird and sad. I think he's 1 foot in the door of that role and 1 foot out, where it wouldn't be shocking if he beats Leon Edwards, pieces together another win, and mounts a streak to warrant contendership status. I don't think that reality would be crazy. He obviously has the talent level. But currently, when you look at the situation where he is obviously the veteran, playing the veteran role against a really, really talented fighter in Leon Edwards, who has done a lot in the UFC, but this is clearly the biggest fight in his career. He's heading into this one with five consecutive victories, and there is no one he has fought that has had the name value of Donald Cerrone. So that shows you that the UFC believes that Cerrone can kind of fill that role. But if he does get the victory here, I'm sure they would be fine with that, because among the guys in the welterweight division, there are a few names bigger than Donald Cerrone, and getting him a part of the title picture, it's a bit of a win-win, where there will be eyeballs on this fight card because Donald Cerrone certainly warrants it, and if he does the job for an up-and-coming guy, that gives a rub to the up-and-coming guy. But if Cerrone does win, he's one of those gatekeepers that is kind of way in his prime, and the upside is still obviously there.
You know, probably the guy that I'm most interested in on this fight card is Tyson Pedro in the co-main event. Of course, he's gone 3-1 in the UFC. They only lost to Leonard Ciffey. He's taking on OSP. You know, OSP's always been that guy that, you know, he seems to, you know, get in that, you know, top five, top six-ish, and he just can't get over that hump. He's also coming in off a loss against Lear Latifi. He had won 3 in a row prior to that one. So that is, you know, probably to me, that's by far the fight that's drawing me to these. But, yeah,
Who do you got in that fight between Pedro and OSP?
I'm going to go OSP. Don't feel good about it, no.
Don't feel good about it either. Same here. I mean, obviously, when you're asking which guy has the most, who's the higher ceiling, it is Tyson Pedro. But OSP just seems like the safer pick. I mean, when you look at the three guys in the UFC Pedro has beaten, none of them stack up close to OSP. And, you know, neither guy looked particularly great against Ilir Latifi. It's the Ilir Latifi contest, I guess, but yeah, OSP is my pick, but it's one where you could feel stupid about it just because Tyson Pedro is clearly a light heavyweight on the upswing.
Yeah, it's, you know, interested to see that matchup, but, you know, look, Saturday morning, I'll probably get up about 6 o'clock and I'll get my Monster Energy going and, you know, I'll be watching the main card.
That sounds incredibly unhealthy.
Okay, it's coming from the guy that eats probably more chicken wings than most people in the world do eat.
Look, man, I'm not saying that I'm a vegan over here who is making the air cleaner with my farts, but all I'm saying is I know what I'm getting in for when I order my 20 Parmesan spicy garlic wings, you know? You're just living in oblivion, treating Monster like it's coffee. You crazy. Absolutely nuts. I mean, we're talking Teruto crazy.
Yeah, it's by the way, my wife was asking me this because she has grown a love for Publix chicken wings. Now, Publix is a grocery chain here in Florida, and she's like, do you think they have any in Texas? If so, Daniel needs to try these out.
You know, I don't think we have a Publix. Well, where I live, which is the Rio Grande Valley, which is getting really popular in the news, and I saw one of my cities was trending, and, well, it wasn't great news. I don't think there's a Publix in Texas. I just Googled it, and yeah, there is – I can't read this. Oh, I think there's 44 stores in Texas. So no, there's zero. there's zero stores in Texas. So I've heard about Publix. I think there was a certain Florida State athlete that had this like deal where he could get five-finger discounts. But I'm looking at the map now, and there's no place where Johnny Manziel could have gone to get some crab legs.
Yeah, we were on vacation. You know, we'd gone away for like a weekend a couple months ago over Orlando, and we had them, and she loved them. And then we were always having the breaded wings, but then one day they didn't have breaded wings, so they just had the naked wings. Got those? Yeah, I'm never going back to the breaded wings again. Always get the naked wings at Publix. They're really good, man. We always like to tell our listeners what the good food is if you're out about our area. So that is definitely one of my spots when I just basically don't feel like cooking, which kind of happens a lot.
Yeah, that's my life every day of the week.
But now, before we get to the interview portion of this week's podcast, we do want to tell you about our friends over at BlueChew.com. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? You're about to have a little fun with your lady friend. Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Now listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work.
You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and you know I always have a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online. It ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, Jason, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy.
And I will tell you, I've had some buddies of mine take advantage of this deal, and let's just say they thoroughly enjoyed the product. We'll leave it at that. But right now, we do have a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. Yep, you heard that right. Your first shipment free when you use the promo code MMAReport. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Use the promo code MMA Report and try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the MMA Report podcast. So right now we are going to let you hear the interview portion of this week's podcast. You're going to hear from Alejandro Lara. Of course, we'll be taking on Leo McFarlane at Bellator 201. Then you're going to hear from Syed Awad. Then you'll hear from Tim Karen. And then the final interview will be with Jared Gooden. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is the fighter that's going to be challenging Alima Leigh McFarlane for the Bellator flyweight title coming Friday night, June the 22nd. It's Alejandra Lara, of course, won her Bellator debut last year. Now this title matchup, and I appreciate the time. I think when people think about this fight, they look at you and they go, everyone's expecting you to lose. Even Alima McFarlane said that, and her way is going is, people are not showing her the respect she deserves. I talked to Viola Letourneau. I said, who do you think is going to win this fight? And she goes, I haven't even seen McFarlane's opponent fight yet. Do you feel like people just aren't giving you the respect you deserve?
I feel that could be an advantage for me, actually, because no one actually know me yet. And that's good for my strategy and my game plan this time. But yeah, it was like when I was in Italy, they didn't even put well my name in the match at the beginning. But that doesn't matter for me. It's like, it's okay. I'm new here. There aren't a lot of Colombians here. So it's what you do, what make your name big.
What would you want the fans of Bellator and MMA to know about you heading into this fight?
I'm preparing this time very good in every aspect, in every area, because the last time my preparation was interrupted and I just had to do like my wrestling and my jiu-jitsu because I was in Colombia and I just approached what I had to hand. noted in my game plan, and this time it's going to be different. It's I feel really good prepared with my striking and ready to demonstrate what I have.
And of course, we're talking. We're 2 weeks out from this fight. So, what is the next 2 weeks like for you?
Okay, in my mind right now, it's to get that belt. I think this is the perfect time to go for it, because it's the category. It's new. Yeah, it's the first defense of Ilima, and I feel that I can go for everything. I don't know. I'm just expecting whatever it happens, and to give the best.
Now, you're going into her backyard. Is that something you revel at? You love the fact of, hey, she's got all the pressure. She's a champion. She's in her backyard. I mean, is that kind of like you like have kind of, I don't know if villain is the right word to say, but do you like being in that scene where you're going into your opponent's backyard?
Yeah, and most in this moment, you know, I have nothing to lose. It's what I feel. I have everything to win. And I feel really confident right now. And yeah, it's a good position from here. I don't have pressure from any part, and it's good.
And of course, I think one of the signs things that people don't know about you is the talented team that is around you. Fires at Fight Invicta, the UFC as well, most notably Alexa Grasso. You know, so kind of talk about your team and who's getting you ready for this matchup.
Yeah, we have a girl team, really tough. They are everyone, the Alexa Grasso and Ildana. Also, we have fighters in Invicta, in XFL, big leagues from here, and they are beautiful like monsters. They are really, really strong, and when you are watching them training, you get that motivation to be like that, like them, and that basis, that strong basis of striking. But also we have very good partners, men. We have a men team too. They are always pushing us very hard, like this hard. Yesterday was a big sparring, and it's a family, like a team have to be. It's really great to be surrounded by people so talented and good partners.
One of the things your manager, Hector Castro, was telling me is that you actually did some commentating for Empire MMA. So in terms of being a commentator for a fight, is there anything being in that seat that you learn about the fight game that may be something you don't think about when you're in the training room?
Yes, I think I have a lot of possibilities, and I'm not close about that. I'm open about everything. I like to act, to develop every skill that I can in every aspect, and I'm going to approach every opportunity that life offers to me.
Is your view of this fight of I'm coming to shock the MMA world?
Of course, that's a thing that I have in my mind. Not just representing Colombia, but Latin America. And to show the people that they can they can get dreams with determination. And I know I can do it. And it's going to be a surprise for everyone. And I like that.
And of course, this all goes down on Friday night, June the 29th. Of course, live on the Paramount Network. Bellator 201. Really do appreciate time. Where can everybody follow you at on social media?
Thank you very much. You can follow me as Aleja Zulara. I appreciate if you can spell it, because in Spanish it's different, but Alejandra Azul Lara, it means blue. And thank you for the support, and you're going to watch a great fight.
sorry, as always, man. I appreciate the time. When this fight was announced, it was honestly a head-scratcher for me because I looked at where you are in Bellator, what you've been doing, and I looked at this fight booking, and I was like, not the fight booking I was expecting for you. Was it a puzzling one for you as well?
Hey, what's up, Jason? Always good to talk to you as well. You know what? It was kind of the same thing for me. I just told him I want to stay busy. You know, I wanted a top five guy. And all the top five guys kind of fought each other recently. I'm guessing that's the reason why. And then they wanted to make sure I got a fight locally too, because the fight is in my backyard. So I think maybe none of the top five guys were ready, because they had a lot of them just fought. And I think Patrick is kind of waiting for a title fight. You know what I mean? And then I don't know what was going on, but they offered me some other dude that was like 5-0 that never fought in Bellator. And I almost turned it down because I was like, at least give me somebody like with a name or somebody like a top five guy. And then they said, well, this is all we have right now. So I said, okay, I'll take it. And the next thing you know, a week later, they said, well, here's Ryan Vittori fighting him. I said, all right, cool.
You know, obviously with your place in this division, is it in a way a little frustrating for you? Of like, man, why can't I just get this top five fight? I mean, does that creep in your mind? Or is it like, man, nah, it's, you know what, Ryan Couture signed the contract. It's about getting paid.
It's definitely frustrating, because at the end of the day, you fight to be champion, but you also fight to put food on your table. So, I'm at a point in my career where I like staying busy, and my family's growing. So obviously the money that needs to come in, I depend on it. And I don't want to be one of those guys that sits back and waits for a year just because I'm waiting for a title fight or waiting for the right fight. So, obviously, and you've seen everybody I fought, I'll fight anybody, whether it's at 170 or 55, whether it's a top contender or not a contender. I'll take the fight, and I want to stay busy, and I didn't want to turn it down and then not get a fight for, 6 months. So, of course, I just said, screw it. Ryan has a name. I know it's not really his name. It's his dad's name. No disrespect to him. But he does have a name behind him, so people are going to tune in. And I'm fighting in my backyard, so I can't complain.
Is there pressure fighting in your backyard?
There's always going to be pressure fighting. And regardless, backyard or not, I don't think there's more pressure. If anything, I think I fight better, because, knowing that, the whole crowd's behind me. But there's always going to be pressure fighting, because nobody wants to lose, especially on national television.
Is that really the biggest fear in fighting, is just losing?
I don't think it's just losing. I mean, of course it's losing, that is definitely a fear, because you train so hard to win. But I think if for me now, it's a matter of, letting my family down. You have a wife and, two kids now. And I know I won't let them down, personally. Like, I know deep down I won't let them down if I lose, but to me it's a letdown. It's like I sacrifice so much in my training, and I'm gone, a lot of hours out of the day, for my training camps. So then for me to go and lose a fight, I kind of like, to me it's like, dude, maybe I should have trained harder, and I wasted all that time training, I still lost. You know what I mean? So if anything, it's like a letdown that, to myself because of them.
And correct me if I'm wrong, your wife just had your second baby, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep. I had a baby boy named Ace.
Is it tough for you to, be in a training camp and getting ready for a fight while also having a newborn baby, where obviously you want to be there as much as possible?
You know what? Life's always going to be tough, and it's as tough as you make it, having a newborn, if you have kids, how it is having a newborn, you don't sleep. And, it's my wife that really doesn't sleep, but at the same time, you still don't sleep. And when I, half my job is, training, my other half of my job is, when I get home, I have a toddler I have to tend to while my wife, taking care of my newborn. So, it's nonstop work, and, it's always going to be tough, and it's as tough as you let it be. And to me, I'm just going with the flow, and I'm enjoying every moment of it, to be honest.
I saw the other day you had retweeted Cub Swanson, which was about what's going on with the early weigh-ins. And, Bellator's not publicly come out, but my understanding is Bellator likes early weigh-ins. But for you, just from a fighter's aspect, do you prefer the morning weigh-in as opposed to the afternoon weigh-in?
I like it. You know what I mean? It gives you more time to hydrate. It gives you more time to digest your food. Before I'll go, you'd weigh in later on. And then by the time you eat, you'd try to eat throughout the night. You would wake up with stomach aches. And I always felt like I was going into my fights really heavy, really bloated. Like my food wasn't 100% digest. And since they've had the early weigh-ins, it's made me cut my weight earlier in the fight camp and get my weight, get leaner and be more prepared, because I know that I don't have that whole day to cut weight. And then since I'm weighing in the morning, I have an extra, like 10 hours. Or whatever it is, or 8 hours, or whatever it is, to hydrate. And when you cut weight, every hour counts, for your body to really replenish itself. So I like it, for the guys that miss weight, those are guys that just, really are being unprofessional. Like you have a contract weight. I don't give a fuck if it's at 2 a.m. You should have made weight the night before and been ready. You know what I mean? If not, you're in the wrong sport.
What do you think the solution is to stop fighters from missing weight?
Personally, I think they should make fighters, I would hate to do it because I'm a, bigger lightweight, but honestly, what I think they should do is maybe add another weight class on the certain weight classes, but then fighters might, even jump another weight. But I think they should make them weigh in, a week before the fight, and they have to be a certain weight, and then the week of the fight, and then even weighing the day of fucking the fight, and they could only be a certain amount of weight. That would eliminate a lot of people from killing themselves and making such a dramatic cut. Because if I knew I had to weigh in three times, like the week before the fight, the day before the fight, and the day of the fight, and had to be in a certain range, I would make sure my weight was extremely low so I don't get out of that boundary and don't, jeopardize my purse and my thing, my fight. And I'm sure a lot of guys would mess up, but I'm sure, they shouldn't give these guys another chance. Like, you let these guys keep missing weight and keep coming back and you still pay them? Fuck that. Like, they miss weight. You don't take 20% of the purse. You fucking take all the purse. Anytime they have to fight, that's what I would do. I'll tell them, you still have to fight. You're not getting fucking paid. And if you don't want to, you're cut. That's it. I'm pretty sure the guys, they're not going to do it again. They won't miss weight again if that happens. But I wouldn't miss weight again. And you're still going to fight because you don't want to lose your job. So, I don't know. There's ways around it. And I think that they got more strict with it and they really penalized them, not 20%. 20% is nothing. Believe me, when you're cutting weight and you have a couple pounds to go and you're dead tired and you start thinking 20%, dude, fuck it, take 20%. I don't give a fuck. Take it. I don't want to cut this last, 2 pounds. If some guys are getting greedy and coming in 5, 6, 7, 8 pounds, that's just fucked up.
I've mentioned about why don't you start the fines maybe at 50%? At least maybe that would get guys thinking about, stopping, basically saying, hey, I'm done. If you start at a higher percentage.
I definitely agree. Because like I said, when you're cutting weight and you have a couple pounds to go and 20% ain't much. But when you start getting 50%, that's a lot of money, and 50% with a fat, penalize them. Say, hey, first time you miss weight, you're taking 50% and you're not fighting for 8 months. It's like, fuck, there goes a lot more than 50% if you're used to fighting every 3 months. They should definitely add a penalty on it. And it should be a mandatory penalty from the commission, something that the organization has nothing to do with. And I'm pretty sure guys wouldn't mess around and miss weight anymore.
I think from the media side, we look at weight cutting as the biggest issue in MMA. But for you as a fighter, is there another issue that should be getting talked about that's just not?
Obviously the weight cutting is the biggest issue because it's messing up, guys, it's messing up their health. It's messing up fights, because they're not, weighing in or they're missing weight. But I think a bigger issue is the health insurance thing because, nobody goes into a fight 100% healthy. And God knows fighters aren't the richest guys. And I'll say about 85% of fighters probably don't have health insurance unless they have families and they have to have it. And so a lot of times these guys, they don't go to the doctor. They depend on sponsors and, little clinics that sponsor them for them to take care of them for free. And even then, you're not getting the best treatment because, they're not trying to spend extra money on you because you're getting the treatment for free. So I think, insurance would probably be at the top of my list because if you have the proper insurance and you're getting fixed and you could do the extra stuff you needed to do in order to make weight. Because let's say you bummed your knee and you couldn't get to a doctor for them to help fix it before your fight, and you're unable to run, and you really couldn't make weight. Because that's your excuse was, I couldn't run because of my knee. Everybody has their excuse, but I think the insurance is probably a major thing that that'd be nice to be implemented outside of just the fight. I know UFC has it, but I heard it's not that great, and I heard you can only do it a couple of times, and you know, then they'll cut you or whatever. But I think like they should have insurance the same way they do regular jobs. You know, you get hurt, you go in, you get checked, pay a fucking $20 copay, and you're good.
Is that something you worry about just for yourself, you know, long-term, once your fighting days are over, that you could have a struggle in just trying to get, you know, basic health insurance?
And I think that's another thing you just kind of touched on is after fighting. You know, I mean, fighters really don't have a plan. It's like, we fight until we can't fight anymore, and there goes that. I think there should be a 401k also implemented or something along those lines to take care of the fighters so that when they're done fighting, because you know, they have something to cover them, some kind of insurance other than health insurance, you know, to cover like their families and stuff, because fighters, how big is the window of fighting? You know, I was fortunate enough to be fighting as long as I am, and I still feel good. You know, I still feel like I got, you know, a good solid, you know, 4, maybe even 5 more years in me. But a lot of these guys don't. A lot of these guys fight for a couple of years and get injured, they're done. Then they have to start a career all over again. But that is something that is on top of my mind about having insurance. You know, I do have a family, so regardless, I have to get some kind of insurance to cover for my family. So, you know, it is something that's in the back of my mind. So I do, you know, have to put money to the side just to pay that extra money for my family's insurance.
Have you thought about when you decide that, you know what, my days as MMA fighter are over, have you started to think about what will be next for you?
You know what, I have. And, you know, growing up, my dad was into, he had a couple of businesses. He had like a restaurant. He had not at the same time, but growing up at different times, he had a liquor store, he had a little grocery store. So I kind of grew up, you know, behind the register as a kid. So I think that's something I'm going to fall back on as soon as I am able to have enough money to invest in something. I'm pretty sure it's probably going to be something, you know, in that avenue with some kind of store, some kind of business that I'll be able to run and run it with my family the same way my dad did as I was a kid.
Awesome. That's awesome. Syed, man, as always, man, I appreciate the time and look forward to seeing your fight here at the end of the month.
Of course, man. Thank you, Jason. It's always good to talk to you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, it's going to be a part of week 3 of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. It is Tim Caren. Tim, as always, man, I appreciate the time. So how did this opportunity come about?
Hopefully it's my record. My record shows it all. I got the call one day. My manager got the call. He told my coach, and I was just at work one day. I had no idea. The coach calls me up and says, "Hey, we're going to Vegas." And I was pumped. Everybody at work had no idea what was going on because I was just like really excited for no reason for them. But
obviously, a lot of guys that are in your position, you know, they look at Contender Series and they see this huge opportunity. Was it something over the past couple months that you kind of thought like, hey, I think this is going to be the next fight?
Yeah, I was hoping anyway, especially after another win, which I got at CES. It was a weird finish, but I'll take the finish. And that's kind of what the game plan, that was my manager's game plan ahead. He told me, be ready for Contender Series just in case. So I was training before I even knew.
Because that was a viral clip, do you think that might have played a little bit into, you know, maybe if you were right kind of on that edge, that put the bump over?
Yeah, it didn't hurt, that's for sure.
I know we talked about that viral clip. Is as you look back on that now, I mean, is there anything that just you're just like amazed by about maybe some of the interaction that you got on social media?
No, I didn't get too much. I got some friend requests and just some of the comments were hilarious, watching it on YouTube and stuff. But other than that, it was luckily I wasn't on the bad end of the viralness. So I didn't really take too much any heat or anything.
Now, of course, as we're talking, episode 1 of season 2 of the Contender Series debuted last night. Did you find yourself looking at that and maybe trying to look at, because it was an episode where we saw some fights where fighters clearly watching it, you're like, man, they're not going to get a UFC contract. Were you taking notes at all?
Oh, absolutely. I was excited to watch, see what I was getting myself into. Just to see the crowd. It's a small crowd. It's lights are on you. It's going to be intense, but fun. I can't wait. But yeah, taking the notes on the fights, like he's obviously looking for something spectacular. And he wants it finished early, it looks like. So that's what me and Andrew are going to do, probably.
It's a unique environment, I think, is about the best way to describe it. I mean, maybe there's 100 people in the room when you start counting all the production people, whatnot. You know, and you're going to be able to hear coaches, which, has there ever been a situation like that where you're just in such a small environment that no question you're going to hear every little word that your coach says?
Yeah, a few of the starting amateur fights, they were all not huge crowds. They were louder than what's in that room. But actually, one of my boxing matches in New Mexico, there was maybe 25 people in there. So it's just taking it back, I guess. So I just got to bring it back to the old school.
They always talk about the various challenges that every fight brings you. And this fight is the biggest challenge, the fact of you're taking on a guy who hasn't fought in 2 years.
Yeah, there's no video on him for the past 2 years. So his skills, I'm assuming, have improved. He's probably just getting better and better through that time off. I know he said he was kind of in and out of the sport a little bit, but that doesn't mean he wasn't training and learning new stuff. So I'm expecting him to bring it. He looks like he's going to bring it. So I'm excited to get in there.
Is the biggest pro of that, it just allows you just to concentrate on yourself?
Yeah. A lot of my fights, that's what I do. I watch a couple fights, maybe once or twice, and then I don't worry about it ever again. I just got to focus on me, my skill set, and implement what I want to implement and hope it goes my way.
How often do you go back and, you know, watch your fights from, say, 2 years ago and think about yourself now and maybe that self-analyzing of, okay, what tendencies am I showing? I mean, is that something you do a lot, or is that maybe more about your coaches just saying, hey, Tim, you know, when you throw this right hand, you're always doing that. Is that more of a coaching aspect?
Yeah, I would say my coaches take care of that. I go back every now and then just to see the change in my skills. When I watch my first amateur fights, I'm like, oh God, what is he doing? But as I grow, the coaches really tell me they're watching me. They know how I fight better than I do. So they give me all the tips I need.
What do you remember most about your first amateur fight?
What do I mirror most?
What do you remember? You know, as you think back that night.
That was a beastie man I fought. I gave him everything I had. If you watch the fight, he does not go down. I'm pretty sure I broke his nose and his eye orbital, and he was relentless. Thank God my conditioning was what it was. I was getting tired by the end of it, but that was what I remember the most. And he was a 40-something-year-old man, and he wanted it.
When you took that first amateur fight, did you think that you would still be doing it now? Or, I mean, was that the long-term plan, or was it like, hey, I'm going to take these fights and see what happens?
No, I expected to. I started with kickboxing in New Mexico, so I was trying to get a fight down there, but it never happened. I just kept doing kickboxing, and then I moved up here into an MMA school, and Nate just set me up with my first fight, and I've been in love with it. So,
you mentioned about knowing to get that UFC contract, you know what you have to do. Will it be tough to maybe be a patient fighter because of knowing, like, hey, I know for me to get what I'm looking for, I got to win quickly?
Yes and no. I'm a rangy fighter. I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to do something stupid to ruin my chances. I'm going to play my game, and all of my fights have finished before the judges, and only one, I think, went to the third round. So I'm just going to keep doing what I do, and it should all work out.
In terms of not doing something stupid inside the fight, has there ever been a moment after a fight is over that you look back on and go, man, that was a dumb move I tried to pull?
A little bit, yeah. you go really go back and look at yourself. You just get caught up in the moment. That's what it is. You're not thinking straight, and that's what your corners are there for. When you're going insane, they're the common voices on your side saying, bring it back.
Are you your toughest critic?
I would say so, yes. I'm very competitive, so I have to be the best. I do not like to lose, and just if I do lose, I get very mad at myself. I'm not mad at anybody else. It's it's obviously all on me if something goes wrong.
Now, in terms of being competitive, are we talking like everything you do in your life? Like, you know, even if it's just like some little game you're playing with your buddies, you just, it kills you?
Oh, I'm the best at everything, I promise. No. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I go insane if I lose. I'll start practicing whatever, even if I've never done it before, I lost, I'm going to practice, so I'm better.
Okay, what's the last thing you lost at that you had to get better at?
Cornhole, actually.
Okay, all right.
I got my ass whooped by some jabroni at work, and well, we have a tournament coming up. I've been practicing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Obviously, weigh-in and weight cutting is such a huge topic in today's sport. But I've been asking fighters this, you know, because I think from the media, that's a subject that we really have been talking about. But for you as a fighter, is there an issue in MMA that should be talked about that's just not?
Obviously, I don't know if there's an issue with the way things are. It's just the way people are. I think people are just insane, cutting from insane weights, and they just can't make it. It just doesn't make sense for their body to do it. Like, I'm a 6'1", so 185 is the normal size for me. I can get down to that. But I'm not 225, 230 pounds, which some of them are. And that's everybody's looking for the competitive advantage in this sport. So you have to play the game, because there's no way I can fight at 205, because there's some behemoths out there. So you just got to play the game.
Do you think that culture will ever change in MMA of just, fighting at the weight that you can make, as maybe opposed to fighting at the weight that you're healthy at?
I don't see it anytime soon. It's obviously derived from the old wrestling ways, always cutting weight to be a little bit smaller and so you're the stronger one in the weight class.
And of course, this fight is coming up here June the 26th. We're 2 weeks out from this fight. What is the next 2 weeks like for you?
Exciting. It's a little dreadful too. It's really my last week right now of intense training, like cardio and everything. Middle of next week is more just kind of relax, sweat, do some sweating, hit some pads, kind of easy stuff, and just prepare your mind and your body, because the weight cut's got to finish.
Is it weird to be fighting on a Tuesday night?
It's gonna be different, that's for sure. It messes with the schedule. Usually I'll end Friday night and training Friday night, so now I have to go through the weekend. But it'll all be the same. And it's going to be weird fighting at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, because down there, the time change and everything. So it's all going to be different. But
what's the earliest time you've ever fought at?
I think it was one of the first fights. So probably like 7 o'clock. So that's like a normal time. 5 o'clock's a little early, but it's kind of nice, because then we'll get to enjoy ourselves in Vegas afterwards.
Have you been to Vegas often?
I've only been once, when they flew me out for promotional stuff, and that was a couple months ago. So I got shown the ropes. I'm excited to go back. I can't really do much the Saturday to Tuesday morning, but I'll go to some shows and just keep my mind off the fight is really what it's going to be all about. And I'm going to hit the UFC gym and get my training in there, get my sweat on, and see who I meet.
I know they bring the guys out there. When you saw Performance Institute, what stuck out to you just, from everything that's there?
Oh, that place is humongous. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't even see that gym that we're fighting in. That's like a baby section of that building. And I was all over the other place. They have a huge cafeteria. So they just... They're setting it up nicely for fighters to just go in there. You can eat, you can train, you can relax. They have a nice outdoor area. It's crazy.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing this fight come up here on Tuesday night, June the 26th. Dana White's Tuesday night Contender Series. Tim, as always, I appreciate time. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Awesome. Thank you very much. You can find me on Facebook, Tim Caron. Instagram, tim.thebear.caron. And on Twitter, tbear331. So go ahead and follow me.
Thanks, Tim, man. I appreciate the time and look forward to the fight.
Awesome. Thank you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to be fighting next Friday night, June the 22nd, NFC. Guy I've had a chance to talk to in the past, Jared Gooden. Jared, it's been a couple months since we talked. We talked back after your win there at the end of March. So what's been going on the past couple months?
Man, honestly, life has been trying to beat me down. You know, it's made me change camps. I'm with a different team now. I'm with X3 Sports, and man, the change has been nothing but the better, you know. And I believe life it makes you like a diamond. Either it's going to pressure you, either you're going to crumble, or it's going to make you into something like a diamond, you know, make you something special. And so I believe I've turned into that diamond, and I can't wait to show off my skills June 22nd, man, and put this guy away.
What's the biggest thing when you change camps? When you go into that new training center, I mean, is it just kind of meeting the new guys and trying to develop those relationships?
Yes. You know, luckily I had my good friend, Nasty Nathan Williams. He invited me over. He's been inviting me to come to X3 for the longest time. And I finally took him up on his offer, and I wish I'd listened to him sooner, you know. And like, I'm just meeting everybody here. Everybody here is so friendly. Everybody's so cool, you know, and everybody's buying tickets. They can't wait to support and come out. I just love it here, man. And man, just it's not, I hate saying we're a team, we're a family, you know, because like we're brothers. I know I could call them at 3 a.m. in the morning, they'd come save my ass if like I had a flat tire or something like that, even though I can fix a flat tire. But I know they'd come out and help me if I needed it, you know.
Is there all part of you that looks back, you know, at this decision and go, man, why didn't I do this before? I mean, or can you not think that way? You can only think about, you know, what the situation is.
Honestly, I do think about it. Like I do wish I made the switch sooner, because, man, it's just night and day, you know. Like I feel so much better. The coaching here is amazing. And so, you know, like, you never want to dwell on the bad stuff. Like, I don't want to call it a bad stuff, but I believe I got too comfortable at my old gym. You know, like, I was working there, I was training there, I had my life pretty set up pretty easily. But man, like I said, life happened and it made me get out of my comfort zone. And that's why I believe I'm better now. And so I think everything happens for a reason, and I'm happy it happened, you know?
I mean, as you think about the past couple months for yourself, I mean, is there one certain thing you can point to of how you evolved as a martial artist, or is it multiple, you know, facets that you look at and just say, man, that guy that fought on March the 30th is not the guy showing up on June 22nd?
The difference, I believe the guy I fought in March is more dangerous, because he was a black belt on the ground. This guy I'm fighting June 22nd, he's just a wrestler, you know. He doesn't want to stand with me. He just wants to and ride me for three rounds. I'm not going to let him. So don't, like, I've evolved to make sure I don't take him out. I got taken down in March, and he had my back for a little bit. That won't happen June 22nd. He's going to shoot. I'm going to punish him for it. I'm going to make him suffer. And that's what's going to happen. He stays in as long as he wants. I'm going to break him, man. But, you know, if he stays in as long as he wants. I've evolved because of the change, you know. Like, I can't say it enough, man. Like, I believe my performance was lacking my last couple fights because, like I said, I got comfortable at my old gym. I wasn't putting in that training like I should have, you know, and wasn't pushing that hard because, again, when I work at the gym I train at, my training suffers because I'm tired of being there, you know. It's like, oh, man, I'm working here, now I got to train, blah, 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 blah. But now that I got a new gym, not working here, I'm just training, I can just focus on my training. That's what's helping me evolve, you know, and I just can't wait to put my skill on display, baby. I'm going to show off. I'm telling everybody, you're going to want to watch this fight. I'm going to show off, man. Put on such a show. My opponent's going to sleep.
You mentioned about that opponent, and as Ladarius Jackson, a guy that I'm familiar with. Yeah, but when you get the fight offer and you hear Ladarius Jackson, were you even aware of who he is?
I hate to sound like an asshole, but no. I respect every fighter that steps in the cage. He definitely has my respect. Man, I just want a good fight. I hope for a good fight out of him. He is a tough opponent. I've watched his fights. He has, like I said, great wrestling. He has no stand up, man. It's hilarious because I can't wait to fight him and just dismantle him, you know? So, hey, she knows.
Thank you. I just can't wait, man. Like, Ladarius Jackson, I respect you, bro. He actually hit me up on Facebook. I didn't respond, man, because I don't talk to my opponents. He hit me up, told me he respected me. I'm going to let you know I respect you too, Ladarius, but bro, this is business, man. I'm going to put you to sleep June 22nd.
You know, is that the first time an opponent has reached out to you via social media?
Honestly, no. These people like to hit me up for some reason. I don't understand it. Like, I've had my last opponent, Sean Kilgus, hit me up. Man, and I've had a lot of opponents hit me up trying to talk to me before the fight. It's like, bro, once you sign that contract, we're enemies. You know what I mean? Like, don't be wrong. Again, I respect you, but we're not friends until after I win.
And, you know, when this interview was set up, it just happened to be that day. I saw a tweet where someone was talking about, you know, the best prospects across the world, and your name had come up, and it was mentioning about the Contender Series, and, you know, and that kind of leads to, you know, a victory here would be four in a row. You put yourself in obviously a tremendous position. Can you even allow yourself to think about that? Or is it got to be like, look, I can't think about two steps ahead until you get past the first step?
No, I think two steps ahead. I already see me going through Ladarius. Don't get me wrong. Again, I respect him, but he's stepping in to get beaten up, you know? And so I am looking forward to the UFC or Bellator call. Man, I am the best prospect at 170. There is no 170 division. There's my division. I run it with an iron fist, and I'm going to keep putting these people down.
Do you pay attention to prospects lists and looking at other 170 pounders and kind of size them up when you look at them online?
No, I you know, what's funny is I really don't like to watch my opponents. Like, I watch Ladarius just because I heard he's a wrestler, I just want to see how he shoots. But I don't like watching my opponents because look, like myself, if you watch my first fight and you watch my last fight, I've evolved since then. You know what I mean? I've changed a lot of things, and I hope my opponents do the same thing. So that's why I don't care to watch their old videos. Like, I don't want to fight the old you. I want to fight a better you. This is more than just mixed martial arts to me. This is physical chess, and I just love outsmarting people. And so I hope you're smart enough to get better. That's why I don't look at your fights. If you don't, I'm gonna smash you.
In terms of, we always know the ultimate goal is to go out there and get the win, but is there anything that you want to prove to yourself in this fight? Maybe is it something about the changes that you have made over the past couple of months to prove to everyone that it was the best decision?
Oh, yes, sir. Man, like I said, I say life happened because it did, and there's a lot of people that showed their true colors when life did happen, so I can't wait for them to be the first one with the salty mouth when they see me win, and not just win, but dominating. You know what I mean? I want to show them that, man, if you can't take me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best, you know? And I just want to prove to myself that I've evolved. My only two losses have been because the guys have taken me down and just held me to a decision. That's it. And I've never been finished. I've never been close to being submitted because I'm a brown belt on the ground. No, you can't finish me, you know? Like I said, I'm the 170 division. And so in this fight, I want to prove to myself that I'm better than the old Jared. I can stop all the takedowns that come, and I can punish you on the feet. If it does go to the ground, because it may, but I can still submit you on the ground. I have submission wins. I just want to prove to myself that I've gotten better.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing this fight on Friday night, June the 22nd. As always, Jared, man, I really do appreciate time. Appreciate you taking some time out of your training schedule to talk to me. But most importantly, where can everyone follow you out on social media?
Follow me on Instagram at NightTrain23. NightTrain is NITE, Train23. Twitter's the same thing, just capital J, capital G, NightTrain23. Man, follow me on Facebook, Jared Gooden. I got my own personal fighter page, Jared the Night Train Gooden on Facebook. Follow me, guys. Pull my life through the camera and live with me.
And there was my conversations with Alejandro Lara, Syed Awad, Tim Garrett, and Jared Gooden. Appreciate all those fighters taking some time out of their busy schedule to talk to me about their upcoming matchups. But before we get into our preview of PFL 2, it is time for the weekly buy-sell segment where Daniel and myself buy or sell on five MMA topics. And let's get kicked off with someone who Daniel mentioned a little earlier on the podcast, and that is Mike Jackson. Daniel, following their Twitter back and forth earlier this week, Bellator will end up booking Aaron Chalmers versus Mike Jackson.
I'm going to buy this. And I think the thing with the Mike Jackson situation is, as embarrassing as this fight was, and obviously people maybe have a bad taste in their mouth after watching the Mike Jackson's Phil Brooks fight. The other end of the spectrum is a lot of people do know who Mike Jackson is. A lot of casual fans do know who Mike Jackson is, and there is value in his name. And this is a guy who's coming off a win in the UFC, Jason. Dana obviously has wants nothing to do with him. Jackson obviously isn't at a very high talent level, so he could be a guy to use as a platform if they want to make Aaron Chalmers look good. It could backfire, as it did for the UFC, but I think if you're looking for fights that will pop, Chalmers and Jackson is the way to go. The trash talk on Twitter between these two was subpar, to say the least. I think Chalmers won the trash talk battle, but it wasn't great. But I think this fight does happen. How about you?
Yeah, I'm buying as well, and I like the kind of the point you brought up there. A, Mike Jackson does have a win in the UFC. And B, I think it's a fight that if you're trying to elevate Aaron Chalmers against a guy that, you know, maybe you feel he can beat, you know, Mike Jackson's probably the route to go. So I'm going to say this happens, and if Bellator ends up maybe going to the state of Texas, maybe that's where you see this one happen. Number two, we mentioned a little bit about UFC 226 earlier, and this is a question about UFC 226, and is, will we see a new champion crowned? So are we saying, well, Daniel Cormier walk out as a heavyweight champion, or will Brian Ortega walk out as the featherweight champion?
I'm going to buy this as well, and I could say buy this, and when we do the preview, I might just pick Stipe and Max Holloway anyway. But I'm buying this from the fact that the odds are pretty good. The odds are pretty good that if you're giving me odds where it's an or situation, it's like the reverse parlay where you get one of the two, just one of the two has to happen, and these are very close fights. I think if you do the math, you would be dumb not to buy this, right? I think if you do the math here, just the odds in two close fights that one of these two guys wins, I think you got to buy it. And Brian Ortega and Daniel Cormier are both incredibly, incredibly talented fighters. So I'm buying this, even though I might not pick either guy when it comes preview day.
I'm selling it. I think both champions will walk out as champions. I like Stipe Miocic and Max Holloway.
I'm just saying. I'm doing Boolean algebra in school right now. Boolean algebra, Jason. It's difficult stuff. It's odds making. It's all kinds of stuff. Maybe I'm getting the wrong part of the class. But all I'm saying is I'm an educated man, Jason, and I make educated decisions, Jason. And when you're giving me a choice of just one of the two has to happen, because basically what you're doing here, Jason, what you're doing here is you're picking two fights and I'm just picking one. You're saying for sure Holloway and Stipe will win. They both must win. I just need one of those guys to lose. So I'm just saying, I'm just making an educated decision, Jason. I'm just saying.
I'm with you on that one. I understand playing the
odds. You can't change your thought, though. I'm winning this by sales segment. So.
All right, number three. Bellator 201 features three top Bellator prospects, Joey Davis, Ed Ruth, Tyrell Fortune. And the prospect with the highest ceiling in MMA is Ed Ruth.
That's a good one. Man, it's tough. Because I'm going to go with Ed Ruth. He looks fantastic, and the one way I would wiggle around this question is for Tyrell Fortune, maybe the ability to have success is greater because of the weight class he is in compared to Ed Ruth. But from a pure talent level, I would say of those three guys, including Joey Davis, I would say Ed Ruth is the most talented prospect, Jason.
Yeah, I want to sell this, and I want to say Tyrell Fortune, but you bring up a great point because of being a heavyweight, but to me, it's got to be Ed Ruth. If I was going to rank them 1, 2, 3, it would be Ruth, Fortune, Joey Davis. And look, Joey Davis, I think the ceiling's high up for him as well. I mean, these are three talented prospects, but Ed Ruth is a guy that clearly on the fast track of what Bellator's doing. And by the way, if people haven't looked at that Bellator 201 card, Bellator's put a nice preliminary card together. Number four, the television ratings for PFL 2 on Thursday will be higher than PFL 1, which is 116K. We got to buy this, right?
Yeah.
It can't get lower.
It's crazy. Well, it can. It can get 115,000. But it's crazy because the general philosophy, Jason, for me when it comes to this type of deal is – one would expect the first debut episode for anything to do better than the second episode. There's just a lot of buzz around the initial deal. And there's a slight drop off for people who tuned in the first time and won't anymore. But damn, that number was so low for the first PFL that I'm buying this. And I'm saying that PFL 2 will be higher than 116,000.
Here's a question, though. How many people are going to be maybe potentially flipping back and forth between the NBA draft and the PFL?
No one. No one will be on the NBA draft and think, I need to watch the PFL. I think people are committed. Although the NBA draft is now the Twitter draft. I mean, drafts are Twitter, you know.
Oh, right? God, you have to stay off. Like, it's, you cannot watch a professional draft and be in front of Twitter. It'll absolutely get ruined for you. You just can't do it. Look, as a Magic fan, I'm interested to see what they do with their first round pick. I'm guessing they're probably, I would imagine they're probably making their pick by 8 o'clock or so. I mean, so, you know, probably by the time the PFL starts, you're probably, you know, what, end of the first round, maybe start to get into the second round, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think a lot of NBA fans who are fans of MMA will choose the NBA draft over the PFL. It's a marquee event. It's what all the, it's going to be the water cooler discussion. Shame, you know, they picked this night on Thursday where more often than not, they won't be going up against hardcore competition until the fall or whatever, you know. And then they go head to head with the NBA draft. So maybe they will do less.
I guess they just got to hope that, like, you know, the Lakers just don't pull off some massive trade and everyone's kind of watching ESPN to kind of hear the analysis of that. But man, I have to buy because, God, I can't see how they would do lower. If they do lower than 116K, oh man, I don't know what that, you know.
Yeah, especially with Kayla Harrison.
Yeah,
which we'll talk. Not like she's, you know, Ronda Rousey or anything, but I mean she's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Kind of see how she does perform. We'll talk about that here in a moment. Final buy sell topic here: Brock Lesnar versus Jon Jones is the biggest fight the UFC can make.
That would be a big one, literally in terms of buy rate. But I am selling this because maybe I'm cheating here, but. Would the biggest fight the UFC make, would it not be Conor versus GSP?
In 2018?
I think so. I think Conor McGregor has proved himself to be the number one commodity in the UFC.
Look, if there was a bigger fight, Conor McGregor is involved, and I was kind of thinking, is it Conor versus Khabib? But Conor can fight anybody on pay-per-view, and it's going to draw a massive amount of eyeballs. You know, and look, we're going to have to see what happens with Jon Jones. I think if Brock Jones does happen, I think it's probably summer 2019.
Yeah, I think so. And that's a huge fight. I would just tell you that I actually feel real confident that GSP and Conor does bigger buy rate. Because GSP is not just any guy. He is a proven commodity on pay-per-view. I mean, this is one of the great pay-per-view draws the UFC's ever had. The GSP Bisping number was awesome. And the idea of GSP versus Conor, every person in America that follows sports wants to see that fight, I think. Brock versus Jones is going to do a hell of business, man, but I think GSP Conor is the biggest fight. And if there's any fight we're missing, and you guys are listening, tweet at us.
Would you rather, from a consumer of MMA, would you rather see Conor GSP or Conor Khabib?
As a consumer of MMA, man, that's a tough question. I would still go, man, I think, look.
It's an easy answer for me.
You go, I mean, obviously you're all in on Conor Khabib.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I don't know why I'm having a hesitation here. Obviously, Khabib's in his prime. Maybe it's because I don't think Conor is as good as he used to be. So I'm not super interested to see him lose. Like the pool is the fight itself. I think Khabib obviously represents a more likely candidate to beat Conor than GSP. But because to me, for Conor McGregor, screw it. Conor McGregor threw a damn dolly into a bus. It's Khabib and Conor. The more I think about it, the more I understand why it's easy for you. Khabib and Conor is the more interesting fight to me.
Yeah, it's. I mean, look, whoever Conor fights, it's just going to draw a massive buy rate. But I do think the UFC is going to try to make Brock Jon Jones. Been some rumblings that potentially Brock is going to be in Las Vegas for UFC 226. So we'll see if that does happen. But of course, coming up on Thursday of this week, it is the second PFL event. This card is going to feature the lightweight division and the light heavyweight division, and also we'll have the MMA debut of Kayla Harrison taking on Brittany Elkin. I talked about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. A buddy of mine who I used to work in radio with, And when we worked at Clear Channel, which is now known as iHeart, he's out in Colorado doing marketing and does some stuff with the bar out there. And one of the bartenders is Brittany Elkin, going to be fighting Kayla Harrison. You know, you look at this fight card, it's hot the bottom. It's a very good fight card. And you know, while we talked about the ratings have not been great for PFL, I mean, when you look at the fight card they've put together, you look at the event from 2 weeks ago, you look at this one, very good fight cards, you know, top to bottom. We talked about it a little bit last week. I really love that Samino Rama Brandon Halsey fight, which is a part of the prelims that can be watched on Facebook. You know, you got Chris Wade, former UFC fighters on this card. The now former LFA lightweight champion, Robert Whatley, he's taking on Tiago Tavares, is on this card. Jason Butcher, a name Bellator fans would recognize. Vinny Magalhaes is on this card. Your opening matchup on the main card is Honey Marks and Sean O'Connell. Before we kind of get into the lightweight and the light heavyweight fights, I want to mention about Kayla Harrison, and I was thinking about this earlier today, Daniel, is no matter what happens on Thursday night, people are either going to be really high on Kayla Harrison, or they're going to be really down on Kayla Harrison, because it made me think about Aaron Pico's MMA debut.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying here. And it's she kind of fits that mold of the uber prospect of plenty of hype that people care about. It's the type of fighter where we're aware of them years in advance. And it was kind of it's something that if we're looking for, like, who's the next person that's going to get similar eyeballs or similar attention or similar judgment, it might be like Jordan Burroughs if he ever fights, but he probably won't. But Aaron Pico is a great situation there, great comparison. Because there has been so much hype, so much talk around Kayla Harrison, and the expectation is incredibly high. Obviously, Aaron Pico bit a big fish in his first contest, and Kayla Harrison is not necessarily doing the exact same thing. No disrespect to Brittany Elkin. It's pretty simple. It's, does Kayla Harrison come out here and look like a damn star, and it's a plus, or does she look mediocre or lose, and it's a big negative?
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I think, is let's not compare her to Ronda Rousey. I mean, just because of the
We're going to.
Of course, everyone is, because I go, oh, you know, Olympic medalist, judo, and they're going to. But look, you know, let's not hold her to that standard. Let's see what she looks like. You know, well,
You know what sucks is even if she was Ronda Rousey, it's 2018 and the game has evolved. If she was exactly at the talent level of Ronda Rousey at the highest level, Jason, she would not have very much success, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. We don't know what kind of fighter she's going to look like. The only people that know the kind of fighter she is are the people inside American Top Team. You know, they're the only ones who truly know, you know, what she is about, but no, I think that no matter what happens, either people are going to be, you know, super ecstatic about her, super low. But also, I was thinking about this is, you know, the PFL has talked about that their plan is in season two to have a women's featherweight tournament. And obviously, it's going to be built around Kayla Harrison. But I was thinking this, like, you look at the struggles that Bellator has had in developing a women's 145-pound division. You look at the UFC basically only has two 145-pound fighters, and Chris Cyborg and Megan Anderson. I sit there and go, how is the PFL going to put together a, you know, a 12-fighter tournament for $1 million payday and for it to be, you know, a high level?
Yeah, I don't have the answer, Jason, because there isn't. Unless they pay $1 million to the UFC to buy all their featherweights, and then they'll need like six more. I don't know. There are plenty of divisions with plenty of prospects, and clearly, the heavier women's divisions aren't there. And I just think the strategy, man. If my advice would be, don't do it. Just make it the Kayla Harrison showcase hour. Just put her out there and have her look good in fights and understand that one day she's going to leave to the UFC if she's awesome.
Oh, exactly.
That's where she's going to make the most money. And you just got to play a small role. You just got to play the strike force role that, oh, God, I'm going to do it. Let me make another example. They're just going to play like the WEC role that – I don't know. I can't. They're going to play the Strike Force role that they did for Ronda Rousey. That's what they're going to be. That's what they should be. And I don't think they should worry about doing a women's featherweight tournament. Other divisions, absolutely go for it. It would be great. Dude, it would be amazing to be a non-UFC outlet to give $1 million payday to a female fighter who isn't like a marquee fighter. I would absolutely love to see that.
I still kind of look at this and it's great for fighters, but all you wonder is how is this organization going to make money when you look what their television ratings were, when you see things about how they're selling $5, you know, tickets, makes you wonder there. But when you look at this main card, NBCSN, all recognizable fighters, you know, Honey Marks, Sean O'Connell facing each other at light heavyweight. At lightweight, you have Jason Hyde versus Efren Escudero, Brian Foster versus Ramsey Ninjam, and then the main event, Luis Firmino versus Will Brooks. Obviously, for Will Brooks, it didn't work out in the UFC. You know, there's really no other way to say it. It didn't work out for him, and I kind of feel like when you're looking at who are you labeling as a favorite to win this tournament, Will Brooks has to be the guy.
Yeah, it would be a beautiful story for a guy who, before his UFC run, this wouldn't be a question before his UFC run. If he had straight out of his Bellator deal into this PFL tournament, Jason, it would be a foregone conclusion that this guy's the massive favorite at this lightweight tournament. Haven't seen him compete in the UFC. I understand why, but I'm going to cheat here and say that I think Jason Hyde may be the favorite, or the winner of the Escudero-Jason Hyde fight, which I think will be Jason Hyde. He is my pick, maybe not the favorite, to win this tournament.
Yeah, look, the key in this tournament, and we saw with the first one, you got to come out of the gate, and you got to get those 6 points. You got to get that first round finish to really set yourself up. If you go out there and get a three-round decision, you know, you're kind of, and depending on, you know, what happens in the rest of the field, there has to be a little bit of concern there. But, overall, I like this PFL card. I don't think I have anything going on Thursday night, so I'll be watching these fights live.
Yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to watch it on Facebook, watch the prelims, because there are some good ones. And PFL's putting out an interesting product, a broadcast team with about 27 people. I'm looking forward to that. I hope they do good for the venue in Chicago. I hope they do. I'm sure some of the tickets will be pretty cheap. And if you're in the area, I would recommend doing that on your Thursday. You can follow the draft on your phone.
You know what I hate about the Facebook watch?
What? That people know that you're on Facebook?
No, the fact of, like, the ads that just pop up in certain videos, like, at the absolute worst time. Like, I was watching, I don't know if you ever watched the dad joke videos, which are pretty comical. They put an ad right as the punchline was coming.
Yeah.
And so by the time you watch the ad, it comes back on, you're like, well, what was the joke?
That sounds like a dad joke. that's not how ads should work.
By the way, I got to ask you before I wrap this up, because I did tease this on social media. So did you ever use the card catalog?
No, I vaguely remember being told about it, and then I never used it. I don't know what the card catalog is. I think you had to go to a library. I don't know. What the hell's a card catalog, Jason?
Did you ever use an encyclopedia to do a research paper?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't think I ever used it to do a research paper. I've opened an encyclopedia before. I have done that. But then I realized Wikipedia was much better.
Oh, yeah. I saw that picture get a post on my Facebook, and I had to share.
What do you do on a catalog card? What is it good for?
It was like tell you where everything was and... You know, you had to source it too. God, you probably don't even know how to source things.
Yeah, but
on
then,
a research paper, they do that. Yes. Like, is that all automatic now? They just do it for you.
Yeah, you source it. You go to citationmachine.com and you put all the info and it sources it for you, Jason. It's beautiful.
I did see another meme. I'm sure you've watched Home Alone, right?
Yes.
There was a meme where it's of the house that the film was stationed at. And the quote was, "The older I get, the more I wonder what Kevin McAllister's dad did to afford his house and vacation to Paris for 9 people." I was like, Yeah, that's a good question.
That is true. This dude sold some hardcore drugs. That's the Home Alone movie that comes out now that's suited for all the people that watched it back then. Now they're much older. They get the darker story.
By the way, I don't know if you saw the trailer for Last Chance U came out.
Whoa, who's the
season three? It's Independence, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that.
Is there a marquee football player that is on that team?
Malik, what's his name?
The
Malik,
Notre Dame guy?
With FSU. I don't even think he made a year at FSU. He was gone. I think basically the best way, it seems like he just didn't fit in. Malik Henry. He went there. He was a prize recruit and didn't work out at FSU. And he's a prize recruit. And I was watching a trailer. A guy with the University of Michigan, a running back. That is a guilty pleasure for me. Last Chance U. I think it comes out July 20th. So on July 20th, I'll pretty much be in Netflix. I'll watch it in about a day and I'll be good to go.
I love it, man. I love it. I still haven't seen the first season, so I hear you love it.
You got to watch it. Anyone who's a football junkie, you'll absolutely love it.
Yeah. Well, right now I'm in World Cup mode. I don't watch a lot, but I make appointment viewing to watch every Mexico game. And it was a big deal down here that when they beat Germany, man. You know, I live right across the border, and most people I know, probably like 30% of my bubble, including people in my family, are like from Mexico. And that was huge, man. That was so huge for them to beat Germany. Oh, my God. I just hope they didn't peak early. But if Mexico does well in this World Cup, man, it's going to be crazy down here in Harlingen, Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley.
Well, I was when I was at the gym on Tuesday, apparently FS1, the Skip Bayless show, didn't really – I was at the gym for like an hour and a half. Didn't see him talk about the World Cup once, but did see them like talk for 20 minutes about the Madden rating for Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers.
That's hilarious. But that tells you Skip Bayless has total control over his show, because you know FS1 wants that synergy. But oh my God, what a stupid topic. Oh.
Here was a crazy thing. I was watching Get Up, the ESPN show. Apparently he's not doing very well in the television ratings. And they were talking about how they cannot show the World Cup highlights because they're not allowed to. And I'm thinking like, okay, I kind of get that. Fox wants the exclusive because they're paying so much, you know, money for this. But I'm also sitting there like, man, that doesn't really help, promote the World Cup.
Yeah, I think that's super stupid for them not to do it. And it's just like people aren't going to go, well – I mean, people are going to want to see World Cup highlights, so they're going to go to FS1 for it. But I don't know, man. I think that's really lame, because when you think ESPN, you think this is where I get my recap of sports. And when the World Cup's not a part of that conversation, yeah. I mean, it's obviously not a killer. Everyone's going to watch the World Cup, but it's like, what a lame move by Fox.
Yeah, very, you know, it was just kind of a very odd thing. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which, of course, comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. Do want to thank my guests, Alejandro Lara, Syed Awad, Tim Karen, and Jared Gooden for coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, be sure to check out our friends over at BlueChew.com. Use a promo code MMA Report for the first shipment free when you use our code. That is MMA Report. We do want to thank those guys for sponsoring the MMA Report podcast. Of course, as always, you can give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at DanielGalvonDGG. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Come up next week on the show, we're going to get you ready for Bellator 201. Also talk about what else is going on in the world of MMA.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
The biggest problem Auburn has had over their history is sustained success. They've not had it. The closest thing in modern time was Pat Dye. They were good, but in this day and age where they want you to beat Alabama, well, good luck beating Alabama. No one is as good as Alabama as a program. Auburn has been a roller coaster team. They either are like a disappointment, or they're competing for a national title. You know, they're just mediocre, or they're beating Alabama on a kick six game. I mean, it's just, it's up and down. You can look at last year and last year's team with a different coach. They're dominating LSU for a first half. They completely blow the game in the second half. It's just consistency has been a problem. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't know that Gus Malzahn's any more consistent. We'll see. They're certainly married to him financially.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.